Today's show is sponsored by JumpCloud. JumpCloud offers a cloud directory platform that gives users a single identity for their email, apps, networks, and even their work devices, whether they're Mac, Windows, or Linux. JumpCloud gives IT admins a single pane of glass to configure and secure those devices, set policies for MFA, full disk encryption, screensaver, and much more. With JumpCloud, remote onboarding and offboarding goes from hours to under 5 minutes. JumpCloud puts zero trust security within the reach of organizations of any size. JumpCloud reimagines the relationship between the user identity, their work device, and their access to resources. Access is securely granted based on trusted identity, trusted device, and trusted network. So if you're looking for a directory that supports heterogeneous OSs, or you just need SSO, MDM, LDAP, MFA, or all of the above, JumpCloud will make your job easier. Try it out for yourself at jumpcloud.com. That's jumpcloud.com.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody is doing well. We are closing out the month of March and getting ready for April. Hopefully, everybody's doing well. Hopefully, people are starting to get those vaccines. I know I had a chance to get my first shot of the vaccine here recently, and we'll have another one here in a couple of weeks. So good to see the progress happening both in the States as well as around the world. So everybody is doing well. Let's jump right into Cloud News of the Week. We've got quite a bit. We're starting to get into that time of the year where lots and lots of Cloud News of the Week. So, you know, a couple of things. We always put the link to the Cloud News of the Week. We don't always cover everything we put on our document, but you can always go take a look at them. So let's hit on a couple of the highlights before we jump into our interview. Let's go ahead and hit the very first one. There's a couple of things around open source, which has been sort of interesting. So managed OSS startup Avien, A-I-V-E-N, raised $100 million in their C round. So essentially what those guys do, and we'll probably have them on the show here sooner or later because it's an interesting concept, is they basically are managing the open source. Let me rephrase that. They're offering a managed service version in the cloud of very popular open source software projects. So things like databases and Kafka and other things like that. So, you know, if you're looking for the open source and you're also looking for an alternative to, you know, what might be available through some of the big cloud providers, they're actually delivering it, you know, on top of those clouds. So you get all the benefits of all the locations, but you know, you're not necessarily tied to the cloud provider. So, you know, kind of a nice combination there, and they continue to grow. Second thing is our friends over at Solo.io, who we've had on the show before, and we've known Edit and Christian and some of the folks over there for a long, long time. They just had their first SoloCon, but I thought it was interesting. They announced Managed Glue Cloud. So they're offering now Managed Istio. So some of the cloud providers do have a service mesh offering, but this is sort of a multi-cloud independent Managed Istio cloud service. So congratulations to the Solo team. Our friends over at DigitalOcean. So they've been a sponsor of the show in the past. We've had them on the show in the past. Always been a big fan of them, really trying to simplify the cloud for developers. DigitalOcean launched their IPO. So I think it's been nearly 10 years they've been in business, but they launched their IPO, raised about $775 million as part of the IPO. And it's always a huge, huge effort to get to that point. So congratulations to that team, and you know, hopefully continued growth for them. It's good to have some variation from the three or four big cloud providers. One last one in terms of big announcements in terms of the tech industry we thought was interesting. Twilio, who we've talked about on the show, really re-enabling what can happen in digital communications. So lots and lots of work around phone and text and SMS and voice services and so forth. They're expanding. They're expanding out into the India and Middle East. They acquired Value First. So another company who brings both capability and brand into a huge, huge market segment for them. So congratulations to the Twilio team who continues to grow. And then finally, just a small announcement, a company called Amazon. Some of you may have heard of them. They sell books or something on the internet. They have a computer service or something called Amazon Web Services. I think sometimes it's called AWS. They announced their new CEO, a gentleman named Adam Selipsky. Adam comes over from from Tableau, formerly a early employee of AWS, was sort of a right-hand man of Andy Jassy for a number of years before he went off to be the CEO of Tableau. And he has now been tapped, once Andy officially moves over into the CEO chair, to be the CEO of Amazon Web Services. So congratulations to Mr. Salipsky, and we look forward to seeing if he's got the stamina to do those three-hour AWS reInvent keynotes like Andy did. So with that, we're going to jump to our show. I think you're going to look forward to this one. We're going to really kind of dive back into a topic that we touch on from time to time and is always something that all of you are very, very interested in. So we're going to talk a little bit about SLOs and how we enable that for our SRE community right after the break. Today's show is sponsored by CBT Nuggets. We know that Cloudcast listeners are curious about technologies, but how are you really learning to master the technologies needed to be a cloud expert? You know, when Aaron and I got started, we had to buy books, set up labs, find experts, and then hope something didn't crash. CBT Nuggets makes it easy to either get hands-on skills or get certified with the latest cloud technologies. Whether it's AWS, Azure, cloud automation, security, or app dev, CBT Nuggets has you covered. What I really liked about CBT Nuggets is the online instructors are both knowledgeable and they keep it interesting. Their courses have built-in test questions, virtual coaching to help plan your certification path, and I can always jump into a virtual lab to get hands-on at any time. Check it out at cbtnuggets.com/cloudcast to sign up for a free learner account. This unlocks tons of great training, and you'll be entered into a drawing for a free 6-month premium subscription. That's cbtnuggets.com/cloudcast. Today's show is sponsored by Cumulo. Cumulo makes managing file data at massive scale radically simple. File data is at the center of the human experience. It transforms genomic research into drug therapies, factory logs into machine learning, LiDAR images into maps, and video into entertainment. File data is the currency exchanged in digital classrooms and labs, advancing knowledge and research around the world. Freeing users and the applications that depend on vast amounts of file data is what Cumulo lives for. As the world goes digital, with unstructured file data driving human experiences from movies to new vaccines, Cumulo makes it simple for you to store, manage, and create with file data at massive scale, whether it's on-prem or in the cloud. Experience Cumulo's file data platform for free today. Cumulo.com/cloudcast. That's Cumulo.com/cloudcast. And try it with your data today. And we're back. And folks, as you know, one of the topics that we've covered actually, you know, I feel like a decent amount over the last probably 18 months, 2 years from a couple of different perspectives is really starting to look at this this concept, this framework, this new sort of role of SRE, right? Looking at site reliability engineering as more and more companies not only begin to put their applications online, they're running 24/7, they need to make frequent changes, and they're evolving their teams. But we haven't really necessarily dug into kind of the real need for what this is, which is about reliability. How do we make sure that we can keep making all these changes, we can do things with more modern applications, but ultimately make sure the site's reliable, make sure the customer's experience is reliable. So really kind of want to dig into that today. And we're excited to have not only something that we love to have on the show, which is new companies, startup companies, but really an expert in this space. So excited to have Alex Hidalgo, who is director of SRE at Noble 9. Alex, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
So first off, Noble 9 just launched. We've been sort of following the company online a little bit, but you guys just formally launched and the product went GA. Before we kind of get into that, let's talk a little bit about your background. You've been in this space for a while. You've written sort of the seminal SLO book, but kind of give us a little bit about your background and what ultimately got you, kind of focused around SRE as a, an area to make better.
Sure. So, I mean, in some sense, it happened almost by accident. I'd moved to New York and I'd gotten a job at a small MSP, like a managed service provider, just doing kind of more IT focused work and, a little bit of Linux system management and things like that. And I got this great opportunity to join this company, AdMeld, as a technical operations engineer. And it was just moving from the IT side to more, large scale cluster management. The company was kind of an early adopter of a DevOps approach. They were using Chef for config management and, things of that era, mm-hmm. This is a little over a decade ago. Sure. And AdMeld was purchased by Google. was acquired only a few months after I started. Started in August, I believe, and was a Google employee by early December. And suddenly my title was no longer technical operations engineer. It was site reliability engineer. And at first, this didn't mean much because honestly, we continued to live kind of in our own little world. We had to continue to support AdMeld. It was a profitable business. We couldn't just drop our customers on the floor, of course. And over the course of about 2 years, we slowly migrated everyone off. Once AdX got feature parity with AdMeld, we were able to start migrating people and eventually decommission the actual platform. And that's kind of when I really needed to find my next team at Google. And that's really when I first started to learn more about what site reliability engineering really is about. And I found myself just absolutely in love. I kind of wonder how I ever did anything else. At this point in time, being an SRE is part of my identity. It's how I think of myself. And it's all about how you approach problems, I think, really. It's about making sure that you're making good data-driven decisions. It's making sure that you're keeping like the customers in mind, right? Always think about the user. That's a primary focus. And that's really where SLOs come in. People often kind of conflate them with just being like lower tier SLAs, but they're really very different. You know, an SLA is a financial and legal decision. You create them so that other companies will trust you enough to sign a contract. SLOs are about keeping everyone happy, and it's not just the customers. It's not just the users. It's about keeping your engineering teams happier as well. And as I discovered SLOs, just as I moved from team to Google to different teams and just saw them as a great management tool. They're a great way to kind of plan your team's work. They're a great way to know what part of your product you need to be focusing on. And eventually I ended up on the CRE team, the customer reliability engineering team, which was a group of veteran SRE that were tasked with teaching Google's largest cloud customers how to do this. How can you make your services more reliable? And in order to best work with someone, you need a common vernacular. And what the CRE team decided was that would be SLOs. So a focus became every time that we would engage with one of these customers, we'd say, look, first you need SLOs. Once you have that, then we can help you further. So I spent a while just teaching people that. And that's really when service level objectives became like my thing.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's interesting. It's fascinating that you now sort of say, look, I can't imagine doing this any other way. It's sort of become, you know, a part of your identity, a part of your personality, which is very cool. It ultimately means you've sort of embraced it as, you know, not only something that you have to do as part of your job, but that you appreciate the importance of doing it. You know, like I mentioned, we've talked with a number of folks who come from an SRE background, actually some former and current Google folks as well, but we hadn't talked as much about sort of service level objectives. I wonder if you could start by just kind of painting us kind of a broad brushstroke of, you know, what do these SLOs mean? Like you talked about them, they're kind of a language, they're a way of measuring customer success, keeping everybody happy. Kind of give us, you know, a broad sense as you start talking to people about this, you introduce this idea, frame up the conversation for me. So we're talking about the same things.
Sure. So there's really three components at play, SLIs, SLOs, and error budgets. And at the bottom, you have SLIs, service level indicators. And really all an SLI is a measurement of how your service is performing from your user's point of view. And I always say user here, that could be a customer, that could be another engineering team within your own company. It could be another service. It doesn't necessarily have to be an actual human. Anything that depends on your service in any capacity. And really in some sense, SLIs are really the most important part of the whole process. The idea is measure things from your customer's point of view. What SLOs do is they give you a target percentage, right? They let you admit 100% is not possible. Nothing is ever perfect. Things fail. That's just how the world works, not just the world of computers, but everywhere, right? Things fail, things break, and turns out people are actually okay with that. People understand this because everything they use at some point in time fails them in some way. So the idea is pick a target percentage that doesn't overextend your team, because trying to be 100% is going to, you know, you need the most unreal expectations for on-call response, and you're going to have to spend way too much money ensuring you're incredibly distributed. And, you know, so it's not a great business decision to try to be 100%. You'll spend too much. But also pick a target that your customers are still good with, right? So just be good enough. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. So then once you have a good target percentage, this is where, you know, you often hear the number nine come up. 99.9% is a common target. 99.99.
Five nines. Yep, exactly. We've all heard these.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I hate people even get to or think that they can get five nines because almost no one can. And even if you do, you probably don't need to. So I'm always trying to push people towards fewer nines and also other numbers that aren't nine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with your target maybe being 97% or 99.3, right? But once you have a reasonable target there, right? So you are now measuring things from your user's point of view with your SLI. You are trying to only be reliable a reasonable amount of time with your SLO target. Then finally, you have error budgets, which is really just a way of measuring your SLO performance over some kind of time window. So now you can say, okay, over the last 30 days, this user journey, right? Like the way they interact with our service in the certain way has been, a certain amount of unreliable, and our error budget tells us we've exceeded that target. So now you can say something like, okay, that means we need to focus on that part of our product because we have exceeded our threshold. We have burnt through our error budget. But on the other side, you could say, okay, we have all of our error budget left for this entire quarter, right? We were actually too reliable. Then what you can say is, okay, cool, we have this budget, let's spend it. Right. And this is where you can do things like perform experimentation and chaos engineering, or, there's a famous service at Google that would just turn itself off to make sure it hit its targets exactly. So that
plenty of services at Google turn themselves off.
Yeah. So, but so that's the basic story, right? Measure things from your user's perspective with SLIs. Don't try to be perfect and pick a more reasonable target using SLOs, and use error budgets to kind of think about how you've performed over periods of time.
Yeah. Well, and as you were kind of explaining to me, I was kind of going through this mental exercise of going, okay, put yourself in the perspective of customers. And, I've similar to you, have worked in various roles previously. And I remember working with telco customers who would just harp on five nines, and that was the only way to think about it. And you think about these things, like there are just basic human things that are now built into systems in which even if the system's down, we know how to retry things, right? Like if a phone call doesn't go through, we push one button, it tries again. But even if you think about it, like at a business level, these things are kind of built in, right? It's, there are return policies. If you get the wrong shirt that shows up or it's the wrong size, there's, if you screw something up at a restaurant, well, they may not fix it by, bringing you out a whole new plate, but they may give you a free dessert. Like there's ways to sort of buffer in this idea that we're just not going to be perfect all the time. But I think your thing is really important to go put yourselves in the eyes of the customer. What would make them happy? And just realize that, yes, the goal is to, do that as much as possible. But, you've also got to build in these ideas of like either they know how to naturally retry something or, you work around that system. And that might be a far less costly way of doing it than, like you said, massively over-engineering something.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the reasons this approach speaks to me so much is I have a very non-traditional tech background. Computers were a hobby for me growing up, but in my 20s, I thought I didn't want to work with them. I thought I wanted computers to still just be this hobby thing.
Yeah.
And so I worked a whole ton of jobs. I worked retail. I worked food service. I was a bartender for a while. I worked in a warehouse carrying around furniture, right? Like I've done all sorts of stuff. And what I realized as I started thinking more critically about SLOs, these are all things that already exist in all these other industries. Like when I was a bartender, I had this mental mark in my head. A new customer walks in. I want to try and greet them within 30 seconds. Right? Even if I can't get them to drink right away, right, that will make them feel, acknowledged and all that. And that seemed like a good customer experience. Now, if it was a very busy Friday night, I probably couldn't actually get to every single customer within 30 seconds. But it was fine, as long as a certain percentage of them were still greeted. When I worked selling furniture, we had, similar goals. We wanted to greet people within a certain amount of time of them entering the store, but not approach them until about 3 or 4 minutes later. Because if you have a salesperson walk right up to you, as soon as you walk into a store, you're going to turn right around. That's just too aggressive, And, we could go on and on with this stuff, but I realize these similar approaches, they're already being used because, again, it's just it's how humans act, you know. And to bring it back to computers, like, you know, if you go try to check out and you click the button and nothing happens, you're okay with that. You'll just click it again, as long as eventually it works, right? But your site can even be entirely down. A story Corey Quinn told me when he was thinking about this when I was on his podcast a little while back. He's like, if he wants to buy a pair of socks and he goes to Amazon and Amazon's down, he'll just come back in an hour.
Right.
And he's still going to buy those socks and no one's lost a customer. And it's fine. Even Amazon can be down for an hour as long as it's not too often. If Amazon starts being down for an hour every single afternoon, people are going to be like, all right, I'm going to go buy my socks from Target now.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's like you said, it's setting expectations to a certain extent. And so I want to kind of take this a next step further. So let's say you've explained to people, okay, we're going to have this measurement system in place, this sort of framework in place for, again, not only sort of setting goals, measuring success, you know, determining, hopefully in somewhat of a dynamic way, if we've been too conservative, if we've experimented enough, but like, how do we start putting these concepts into place, right? Like, how do we start making them actionable, right? Once I understand the concepts of it, how do we start making them actionable?
So that's where actually Noble 9 kind of comes into play. You know, it's easy to understand the concepts behind what an SLI is and picking an SLO target. Turns out it's often more difficult to actually calculate that than people think. I see plenty of people get started and they're just keeping track of things manually in a spreadsheet somewhere, or, you know, there are some SaaS providers that will do this for you. You know, like Datadog has, some basic SLO calculations, places like Honeycomb, like do them very well, you know, but, if you're running Prometheus, you got nothing. You can do some pretty complicated PromQL to kind of approximate it, but you definitely can't calculate error budget over time, you know? So it's actually, that's the stumbling block for, you know, like for people is they have these ideas, but then like, oh, I'm going to have to build additional tooling. I'm going to have to go build new stuff just to really get the right data to actually make these decisions, you know? So that's step one is it can often be kind of difficult to actually do the math. But then if you do get the math done, even if it is in a spreadsheet, and I think there's actually like nothing wrong with that, if that's working for you, like that's just fine. It does also require a cultural change. It does also require people to realize that if we are going to say that this SLO data is better data for us to make decisions with, you know, you're going to have to convince a lot of people. This is something that involves, you know, like your leadership and the business side of your business, your product org, your engineers, your operational teams, you know, everyone has to kind of understand that this is a different way of thinking and everyone kind of has to be on board with that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can imagine this again, you know, you go from this thing where you, like you said, you have this nines mentality sometimes to, you know, we're going to buffer in enough time to be able to do stuff like chaos engineering. Like, wait a second. Does that mean you guys are taking too many coffee breaks, or does that mean, I mean, like, yeah, I can definitely see where you have to get buy-in, but you also have to be able to explain this to people kind of in their context, not just, you know, SLIs and SLOs and error budgets, but like, okay, this means customer satisfaction. This means net promoter score. This means other types of things and do that. You know, as you've worked with groups and talked to different people about the concepts, do you find it seems to be, you know, more impactful, more changeful to ops teams or to sort of the app dev teams? I mean, like who tends to sort of gravitate towards it more easily versus who seems to struggle with the transition?
I think, so when done well, SLOs can benefit absolutely everyone.
Sure.
But to more specifically answer your question, I think it's often the more operational side of things that kind of jumps on these first. And that's because one of the great uses of an SLO-based approach is you can get rid of almost all of the rest of your alerts. If you can get to a point where you're meaningfully measuring, is this service doing what its users need to do? Then you only have to page when it's no longer doing so too often. And I've been on teams where we were actually able to get rid of every alert, every threshold alert, you know, like every spammy false positive. The only thing that we would get paged about was, is this thing not doing what it's supposed to be doing too often? And that's one of the reasons I think more operational, like Focus Folk and why SRE, people who catch the pages are often first on board with this because it's a great way to reduce that pager load. But as things grow, I really think it's not difficult to get lots of people on board. You just got to make sure you have the right elevator pitch and perhaps the right language, an SLI, right? That means one thing to people actually doing the measurements, but I would say an SLI is just a user journey to a product manager. An SLI is just a KPI to the business and the leadership at your organization. You can go a step further and say an SLI is just a transactional test. That's how you can get your QA and test org on board. Right? Everyone's already thinking about things in the same way. You just got to make sure that the language is aligned. Everyone wants the customer to be happy, and most people understand you can't be 100%. You just got to make sure you're having the right conversation. So make sure you know that, an SLI to a product manager is a user journey. Let's describe it in that way.
Yeah. No. Well, and I think, if we've learned anything from this show over the last decade or so is that, those skills of being able to storytell around change, around new stuff is, almost as critical as ultimately being sort of an expert in whatever domain you are, whether it's a technical expert or something else. But yeah, like you said, being able to tell that story and make it interesting to the people that you're talking to is super important. Is there a concept of, we talked just a second ago about you kind of need to get buy-in from different groups, and sometimes some groups buy in more so than others. Like, is there sort of a concept of low-hanging fruit, maybe the most basic things that you can do, the good hygiene that you can do to get started down this path? Or is it, it's sort of you have to be all in to make it really successful?
No, I think you can just get started. Right? After Google, I was at Squarespace, and okay, People asked me, "We want to do SLOs. Can you teach us how to do SLOs?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And turned out it was a lot more work than I thought it would be. When you're starting from the ground up, there is just a lot you have to do. But the way we finally actually got things running was the team I was on. We just set one, and it was aspirational. Right, we were responsible for the Elk logging platform, right? Okay, the whole Elasticsearch setup, and it was bad. It was not performing well, and so we set a target percentage of a log line will be ingested within 5 minutes 99% of the time. That's not very ambitious, right, and we still exceeded our error budget. I think it was within 17 hours, and this kind of we now had a signal. We're like, oh, this is that bad. And so we now said, okay, cool. This is now an all hands on deck situation. We're pulling everyone off their project work. We need to fix this, And so we just got started. And then when other teams saw how we were able to use that data as a catalyst to make a decision and to fix things. And once they saw that, a few months later, we updated our SLO to be within 2 minutes, 99.9% of the time. It really served as a good example of how the system can work. So yeah, I think there's low-hanging fruit in the sense you just get started, because a service level objective is just that. It's not an SLA. It's not an agreement. There's no contract in place. If the one you pick isn't the right one, that's fine. Go change it. Go update it, or even get rid of it. Maybe you're not measuring the right thing at all, and that's totally fine. That's part of the process. It's a different way of thinking about your services. It's a different way of gathering data you can use to make decisions. But again, they're not contracts. So if you want to get started on this, you don't have to have full company buy-in. Just get started. Produce some data, and now you have a story that you can tell to help convince others.
Yeah, no, it makes a ton of sense, and just that kind of core realization that an SLO and an SLA are different, and you can own the ones that you can own is super important. We haven't spent much time talking about the actual Noble 9 platform, and we kind of mentioned it a little bit. As I sort of looked at it, tried to understand it better. It feels like it's something that's not a replacement for a bunch of tools, but it's a way of ingesting, a way of kind of aggregating things from Datadog and AWS tools and other stuff and so forth. Give me the kind of 2 minute quick elevator pitch what it is, and then most importantly, if somebody is like, hey, we're kind of going down this journey, if you guys can help us measure better, set goals better, let's talk. Give us kind of the how does it kind of pull things together, and then what's the best way to get started?
Sure. So as I kind of alluded to earlier, the math to do this is not always easy. And even the tools that will do it for you often don't do it very comprehensively, or they don't give you a lot of options. And that's what Noble 9 is. Noble 9 is there to do your SLO math, to calculate your error budgets for you. And one of the most important things that kind of sets it apart from anything else out there is we aim to be able to process data from anywhere. You have the data, we will be able to ingest it. Today, this is Datadog, Prometheus, New Relic, but we have five other integrations currently being worked on. By the time this is published, we should have our Lightstep integration done, for example. But I have a spreadsheet with 40, 50 of these, and that'll be ever growing, right? No matter where you have your data that you need us to perform this math against, we will be able to ingest it for you. And then on the other side, we also want to be able to send this data anywhere, right? If you already have, your data lake with all your business logic in it, it should live right there with the rest of your business decision data, not only will we have pretty charts and graphs, which we definitely do, we also want to make sure that this data is most useful to you and your organization. And finally, just as someone focused entirely on this problem, and with some experts on board that have been doing this for a very long time, we're going to be able to do all sorts of advanced math for you as well. Right? It's one thing to be able to just say, okay, here's my count of good events over total events, and how does that match up against my target percentage? But what if you have very low sample data? That's fine. We can normalize that for you. What if you have very noisy data? We will be able to normalize that for you too. What if you want to calculate your SLO based off of four different data sources? You have some stuff in Amplitude and some stuff in Postgres and some stuff in Graphite. Cool. We will be able to do that for you. So that's kind of what the whole story is about. It is definitely a complementary tool. It's not meant to replace your monitoring solution, your business logic solutions, but it's meant to live alongside those and just hopefully give give you better insight.
Yeah, no, very, very cool. It's always good to see when, we sort of see these evolutions. People have been reading about kind of the Google SRE way of doing it. The challenge with that is, you may not have Google engineers helping you. It's nice to see the evolution where it's like, hey, we can bring these really powerful concepts to you anywhere you want to. Like you said, you do the hard work for folks to sort of sort things out. They get the benefit of it. Very, very cool stuff. Alex, thank you so much for the time today. We're gonna wrap up and be conscious because as a growing startup, you guys are super busy. But thank you so much for kind of educating us today, giving us the background on why this is important, what Noble 9 is doing to sort of bring it to the masses. But with that, I'm gonna wrap it up. Folks, I want to thank Alex for his time, for both Aaron and I. We want to be thankful for what we've learned today. And if you have a chance, if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend. We're trying to continue to grow it. If you've had a chance to listen to Cloudcast Basics and you can give us some feedback on that, we'd love to hear it. And if you get a chance to rate the Cloudcast on your favorite podcast player, Apple Podcasts and others, we would love that as well. So for that, we're going to wrap up and we will talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.